Good morning. Let's see, this is Sunday, January 7th, 2024. Today we are looking at this book by Joel Goldsmith called The Spiritual Power of Truth. In it, we are looking at specifically Chapter 9, God and error. I'm thinking this will complete our study of the nature of error. There are some other things I want to review next week or the week after, but this should probably wrap up our study of the nature of error. And I want you to pay attention, especially if you are a beginner or a new student. Say you've found the infinite way in the last year or two. And if you are an advanced student, then you will hear a lot of things that you already know but agree with, and maybe some things that you didn't know. So let's jump in. Joel begins by saying, when we undertake the study of the infinite way, it must seem to be a difficult subject, one not easy to encompass. The reason is we are always hitting up against more and more principles. Our group is called Mystical Principles because we study these principles, put them into practice, and discover the fruitage. So he says, every time we read a book, every time we hear a tape, there are more principles, and we wonder if we are ever going to get to the end of it. But as a matter of fact, it is not quite that way. There are not many principles revealed in the message of the infinite way. What seems to make it so involved is that each principle requires so many different ways of hearing it and reading before we actually attain the consciousness of it. And that's what this chapter is going to be all about, attaining the consciousness of the principle, the nature of error. For instance, he says, one of the major principles of the infinite way is the nature of God. The God of the infinite way is a very strange God, because it is a God that we cannot pray to for anything. So if you didn't know it before, now you know it. In the infinite way, God cannot be prayed to for anything. This is because our God is not withholding anything. And if it is not withholding anything, it cannot give anything. That is all there is to that particular principle. There is no God to pray to for anything, because God is not withholding anything. However, if you think that anyone can possibly understand that without a year or two or three of thinking of it in 100 different ways, you are mistaken. So it's real easy to say, oh, I get it. God is not withholding. So, God cannot give. That's the principle right there. But Mr. Goldsmith says it takes 1 to 3 years of thinking about this in 100 different ways, reading it, hearing it, contemplating it, putting it into practice, reminding yourself. You sit down to meditate, "Dear God, if it be thy will, let me whatever." And then you remind yourself, "Wait a minute, God has nothing to give. God is not withholding. God is." And you put that into practice right there in your meditation. And you put it into practice, and you put it into practice while you're walking around, while you're driving, while you're shopping. You put it into practice, and you put it into practice. And you come into, slowly, the consciousness of it. The sun is shining, and it is manifesting both warmth and light. It is not giving it, because it is not withholding it. It is an eternal state of being, of isness. Yes, the sun is ising. So you can see that to pray to the sun for light or warmth is nonsense. Eventually, you get to see that this is the truth about God. God is a state of infinite divine being. God is always being. And therefore, there is no way to influence God to be more of God. Even God cannot withhold its godliness. Everything that is an expression of the consciousness of God and is under spiritual law. Now, you can go through the Infinite Way writings and spend months, just on the nature of God. And by months, he means 36 months. Please, please, please do not fool yourself and rob yourself of attaining the consciousness of this. Do not fool yourself because you know the words or the thoughts that you have it. Because you don't, and you won't. You can go through the Infinite Way writings and spend months just on the nature of God. This is not because there are a lot of principles to learn. There's only one principle. The principle of the nature of God. However, there are hundreds of facets of that nature. And it is the study of those facets of that nature that eventually gives us the consciousness so that we can rest back in God instead of praying to God. All right, so it takes months of working with the principles surrounding the nature of God, hearing it, reading it, contemplating it, reading it again, sometimes throwing your book across the room and then running after it. It takes all of that work, internal work, to develop the consciousness where you can sit back and rest in God, and you no longer have to pray to God. I think we had a talk about that one time called something like "Don't Pray to God" or "God Needs No Prayer." I don't remember what it was, but it's on the website somewhere. Our next principle is the nature of error. Once you have comprehended the nature of God, you do not have any error to comprehend or to understand, because there cannot be an infinity of good and of evil. Therefore, you come to the fact that error must be illusory in nature. As we follow the nature of God and the nature of error, we come to the realization of the impersonal nature of good and the impersonal nature of evil. Yes, we mentioned that last week or the week before, or the week before that. God is impersonal. There's no person involved. God is omnipresence. And so God is impersonal. But error is impersonal mental images, impersonal concepts, impersonal hypnotism, impersonal mirage. It's impersonal. There's no person. And we put forth the question, if God is impersonal and error is impersonal, where is the person? So, he says, we are still on the subject of God and error. With just those two principles, think how many different ways we are approaching the subject in order to develop an actual consciousness where we come to the point of resist not evil. We don't have to resist it or treat it or work on it or overcome it or get God to overcome it or get God to dissolve it. None of that. Until we come into the consciousness of resist not evil, we are not in the practice of the infinite way. So, dear friends, if you read what I just read, it takes months, sometimes years, to come into the consciousness of resist not evil and being able to rest in God instead of praying to God. And until you do, however many years it takes, you are not in the practice of the infinite way. As long as we are using a power of God over sin, disease, death, lack, limitation, we are not in the infinite way. Practice. We are in the infinite way practice only when we have arrived at the state of consciousness that does not fight error or that does not try to get God to do something to error. Okay, so it takes 3 to 5 years, he said, before you come into the practice of the infinite way. We still have not moved away from the nature of God and the nature of error. But see how many ramifications, how many facets we go through to arrive at that consciousness. So, if you put into practice the principles of the infinite way, of the nature of God, of the nature of error, the nature of prayer, you will develop through the practice the consciousness of truth. It is right to say that for the young student, this is going to be a very difficult path, because they must overcome every bit of belief or understanding that they ever had about God. They have to lose the God of the Orthodox Church. They have to lose the God of the metaphysical world. They have to come into the awareness of God, the God that is. Into an awareness, an actual consciousness of the nature of God. Then, of course, they have to violate every teaching that has ever existed, whether orthodoxy or metaphysics, as to the nature of error, until they see that error is never personal. So that's a lot of unseeing and unknowing, isn't it? You have to empty the pot before it can be filled with truth. Like the man that went to a Zen master, he wanted to know truth, and he had a lot of questions. And I believe he was a college professor. So he sat down in this little shack with the monk, and the monk said, "It is good that you have come, but first let's have tea." I know you've heard this story before, but I like telling it. So he heated up the water and put some tea bags in it, and then he began to pour. And he poured this man's cup. It came up halfway, and then three quarters, and then it was full right to the brim. But he kept on pouring. And it ran down the cup, across the table, onto the floor. And he smiled and poured, until finally the man said, "What are you doing? It's full." And he set the pot down and smiled, and the monk said, "Like this cup, so is your mind. First, it has to become empty, and then it can receive truth." And that's what Joel's telling us. You have to unlearn, unknow, unsee lots and lots of things. And then, finally, you're empty and able to receive truth, able to receive the consciousness of truth. If you see a man stealing, you cannot call him a thief, because it is not the man. It is carnal mind. Now, this was very interesting, this next part of the sentence. It is the carnal mind, this ignorance of the nature of God, this ignorance of the nature of error. And so what is carnal mind? An ignorance of the nature of God and an ignorance of the nature of error. And so if it takes 3 to 5 years to develop the consciousness of the nature of God and the nature of error, you are still the natural man. You are the carnal mind during that process, until you have unlearned, unheard, rewound to where there's none of that left. All right. So that's what the carnal mind is, an ignorance of the nature of God and an ignorance of the nature of error. So whether a person is sick or in sin or in poverty, it is still the impersonal carnal mind, the arm of flesh that we recognize to be nothingness, because it does not have its source in God. God did not create the carnal mind. In fact, what God did not create was not made. But you see it, there it is, operating, yes. but it was not made. So what are you seeing? You have an ignorance of the nature of error. And you're seeing that ignorance. You're seeing something when nothing is the truth. Evil cannot have its rise in God. God is too pure to behold iniquity. God is love, not hate. God is life, not death. God is wholeness, not limitation. So you see that while it may take 2, 3, 4, or 5 years of very dedicated study before they actually come into a consciousness of the nature of God and a consciousness of the nature of error, nevertheless, when they are all done, they still will have attained only those two major principles. Along with that, they will have learned something else. Without setting out to do it, they will have learned the nature of prayer. Because automatically the understanding of the nature of God stops a person from asking or demanding something of God or trying to influence or bribe him or bribe it. This alone sets a person off on a whole new angle of prayer. And the thought must eventually come, how in heaven's name then do I bring myself under God's grace? Yes, these are the struggles we have. These are the questions that come bubbling up. That's why sometimes we throw the book across the room in frustration. And don't kid yourself, there's a lot of frustration on this path until you come into the consciousness. And then there's a lot of resting back. Well, in those 2, 3, 5 years, they will find a dozen different ways before they eventually get to the ultimate, where they realize that you are never going to get under God's grace through words or thoughts. Yes, that's another frustrating time when you recognize all of your knowing these words and thoughts inside yourself, when you sit down to meditation, are completely and totally without power. The best that they do is perhaps remind you that you are to be still. It's not an easy path, I'm telling you right up front. You are only going to get under God's grace when you have gotten past words and thoughts to the place where you just sit in a state of receptivity until you feel the presence and power of God is upon you. Now, well, I think he's going to say that. Let's see. Yes. Now, if the beginner were to try that, they would go to sleep. Or they would hypnotize themselves, or would develop a false faith. In other words, a beginner cannot attempt to reach God through the silence. Now, I hope you heard that if you're a beginner. A beginner cannot attempt to reach God through the silence. You know, you have to begin at the beginning. There is an order of books. It's on my website, mysticalprinciples.com, under texts. Under text, you'll find that document, the order of books, or something like that. I know it's order of books, order of something. Oh, heck, I'll go look. Okay, so it's called, it's under texts, and it's called The Order of Infinite Wave Books. And this is the order that Joel gave. He spoke this order. The first book, if you're a beginner, that you should look at is Living the Infinite Way. And then you should take the principles in that book, Living the Infinite Way, and live them. Put them into practice. And that alone should take you many months. From there, you should go to practicing the presence. And you should make that your lifestyle for a while. Practicing the presence, morning, noon, and night. Practice the presence if you wake up in the middle of the night. Practice the presence before you step outside in the morning. Practice the presence before you take a bite of food. Practice the presence before you retire at night. That should take you another several months, maybe a year or two. And then you can go to the art of meditation and learn how to meditate. Now, you don't just jump into meditation. First, you learn how to contemplate. Contemplation will lead you gradually to a place of stillness where meditation begins. And so, essentially, you learn how to use words and thoughts to eliminate words and thoughts. And to, how did he put it? Sit in a state of receptivity until you feel the presence and power of God is upon you. And that's an actual experience. And from there, he says, we can go to any book we want. We can go to The Infinite Way, which is one of his deeper, if not the deepest book. Easy to read, a lifetime to practice. We can go to The Art of Spiritual Healing and begin to learn the specific healing principles and practice them. Again, we're talking years. See, it's so easy to listen to a talk and read a book and feel like I've got this. But then here comes the doctor and he says, you have cancer. Here comes the accountant and he says, you are bankrupt. Here comes the spouse and they say, I want a divorce. What do? You probably go running to the book or books. Wow, I missed something. What did I miss? How do I practice this? Then you get serious, don't you? So, the beginner not only has to unlearn pretty much everything they ever learned, but they have to practice these principles and get up on shaky legs and try to learn how to walk. Now, I'll read this again. If the beginner were to try to sit back in a state of receptivity in silence, they would go to sleep. or they would hypnotize themselves. A beginner cannot attempt to reach God through the silence. That can only come after you have tried every other way and have finally realized, none of this is the way, that is the way. By this time, when you are silent, there is no danger of your going to sleep. You are awake, wide awake and alert. There is no danger now of any false god or occult experiences. Now you know. Be still. God is not in the whirlwind. God is not in the clamor of your human mind. God is not in the words and thoughts of man's origin. God is in the still, small voice. You can see, he says, that it must take all of the reading matter, all of the tapes, just as it takes all the years of schooling, until we come to this consciousness when all of that drops away. And all we have left, all we are left with, is the nature of God and the nature of error, and an inner stillness, an inner peace. You can understand at this point why the mystics had very little to say, why eventually they left their students and went away. This was because it all seemed such foolishness to keep repeating and repeating these same things, even if he repeated them in 100 different ways. These are necessary for the beginner. There is no other way for them to attain it. But it becomes unnecessary once you have released God. Once you have released God, there is no need for all these words and thoughts. Now, have you asked yourself, what does that mean, released God? He has a chapter on that in Realization of Oneness. Release God. It means setting God free. You can't get anything from God. Anything. Nothing. And so you have to release him. I mean, release it. I don't experience God as a him, although I call him Father. I experience God as a presence, an it. So, you have to release it. I let you go. I'm no longer demanding, insisting, wanting, desiring. Joel says that none of this, these deeper experiences can come until we've given up the desire for any person, place, or thing. No, we have to give up the things. No person, place, or thing. He says that in The New Horizon. All right, so he says here, these are necessary for the beginner. There is no other way to attain it. But it becomes unnecessary once you have released God. Once you have released God, there is no need for all these words and thoughts. Now the need is for inner quiet communion. Now the need is for introspection, just pondering the nature of God within, communing with the Spirit within. Your prayer becomes communion, doesn't it? Because it's the conscious awareness of the presence that reveals to you over and over again that error is nothingness. And when it has revealed that to you over and over again because of your practice within, your practice of communion, then your consciousness is transformed. You are renewed. Behold, I make all things new. And your consciousness of this truth makes you every bit new. Along with this, he says, the ability after 4 or 5 years has come to you to look out there at this world and completely impersonalize it. This should be your practice. Impersonalize everything you see. When you see good, you say, ah, I am seeing more and more of the divine nature coming into expression. And when you see evil, you are not personalizing. You're not personalizing it, but immediately you say, ah, yes, it's the carnal mind, the arm of flesh, nothingness. When you see some part of the world still determined to have war, and we see that right now, or you see the determination of both sides not to settle, each one wanting to have its own way, you no longer blame them. You no longer blame the leaders. Stop blaming Biden. Stop blaming Trump. Stop blaming Netanyahu. Stop blaming Hamas leaders. Stop blaming the Houthi. Stop blaming Hezbollah. Now, you say, carnal mind, and perceive that personal sense of self that wants to benefit, profit, or glorify as the carnal mind. Instantly you recognize it not as something that has to be defeated, or as something that we need a God power to destroy. The moment you have recognized it as carnal mind, you have recognized it as the arm of flesh or nothingness, and you have met it. So, a student who has seriously studied these writings and tapes for 5 years should at least be at the beginning of that state of consciousness which has settled down into an inner peace. 5 years, ladies and gentlemen. That's because they can see the nature of God and they can instantly recognize the nature of error wherever it appears, even if it does appear as a person, a condition, or a thing. Life becomes simpler. Truth becomes simpler. Now, this is the reason why I wanted everyone to study the nature of error, because I could see that many of us were settling for the words and the thoughts instead of taking up the practice, investing the 5 years, and coming into the consciousness of the nothingness of carnal mind and the omnipresence of God. So he's going to say more about that now. Living the truth becomes simpler because at every sign of good in the world, you have that wonderful feeling of, here is the nature, here is more of the divine consciousness coming into manifestation. At every sign of evil popping up, you have the feeling. Notice he says the feeling, not the thought. You have the feeling, aha, dear old pal, carnal mind, the arm of flesh, or nothingness. Thank God we are not going to fight it. It is nothing. Do you see that? He asks. Do you see that? After all the tapes that have given us specific things to handle and how to handle them, after all that is in those tapes is ingrained in our consciousness, we should be in the position that we are in with 12 times 12. And first we had to say, well, let's see, 2 times 2 and 2 times 1 and 1 times 2 and 1 times 1 and then add them up. However, now when someone says 12 times 12, we say 144. And we have no processes. When we say 144, it includes all the processes. Now do you see how horrible it is for a young student to say, evil is not real? They have not gone through any processes. All they are doing is mouthing vain repetitions, which they have not at all proven, have not at all learned. So for me, it is a horrible thing to hear a young student openly voicing the most profound statements of truth, because I know it is exactly like a parrot. A parrot, I am sure, could learn the laws of relativity and recite them if he had a good teacher. However, the parrot would not know a thing about them. We have to go through every step that is outlined in these writings and recordings and monthly letters. We have to work with these principles. We have to prove them, principle by principle, until we eventually arrive at the state of consciousness that sees good and says, ah, here is not a good man or a good plan or a good group or a good religion. Here is the divine consciousness really being lived and manifested on earth. This is not done by personalizing it, but by seeing it as God in expression. And by the same token, reading or hearing about all kinds of evil in the world, we are saying, yes, I know thee who thou art. I know thee, the carnal mind. The universal belief in two powers, the arm of flesh, nothingness, no power. I do not have to fight you, and I do not have to call upon God. I only have to recognize you, and it is done. All right. Now I want to pause here and bring something to our attention. He is repeatedly saying in this chapter that eventually, after 5 years or more, we attain the consciousness of the nature of God and the nature of error. You remember elsewhere he says, we translate everything we see back into the truth. This is not human good. This is grace manifesting. This is not human evil. This is carnal mind, nothingness, because it does not have its source in God. And eventually, he says, translation occurs all by itself. But he doesn't say it takes 5 years to get there until this chapter. And it may take 7 or 9 or 12. You know, we fool around a little bit with truth and see an improvement and think we have arrived. Then something major hits us and we realize, uh-oh, I didn't really have that consciousness. I had the words and the thoughts. And if we are sincere, we double down and work toward that consciousness. So here he's saying, we have to attain the consciousness of these two principles, the nature of God and the nature of error. And so what I wanted to bring up was, it is not the words and thoughts about the nature of God or about the nature of error. That's not the same thing as the consciousness. And I tried to think of an example of the consciousness of something. And the only one I could come up with is this. Most of us, by now, in living on Earth, have come to a place where we step out the front door and we feel something in the air. Not sure it's even in the air, but we feel something, and the thought comes immediately, rain. It's going to rain. And sure, as the Dickens, a few hours or a few minutes later, it's raining. You just come to know it. You know it with your consciousness. The same way a consciousness knows to fly south in the winter, if you're a bird. You step outside, rain. It's as automatic as that. You step outside, inside you hear rain. Or you feel rain. It's a feeling. That's the way consciousness works. So when you have the consciousness of the nature of God, it's the same thing. You step outside, the presence, you feel it. Immediately the shoulders go down and you rest in it. Someone comes screeching around the corner and you have the feeling, illusory appearance, mirage, nothingness. Maybe no words at all. But you continue to rest. And then they see you, they slow down, they may even wave. But you have the instantaneous consciousness of the nature of God and consciousness of the nature of error. Just like that feeling of stepping out and knowing rain. Okay, so that was the example I came up with, so that you know you've got some work to do if you're beginning to study these things and haven't taken the years to put them into practice to come to the place where you know God, the way you know rain. At this stage, if we have been faithful in all of our specific work, we should be able to work like this. Suppose there is a warning in the newspaper or on the air about storms, volcanoes, cyclones, tidal waves, tsunamis. By now it should be a simple thing for us at any moment of the day or night, regardless of what else we might be doing, and we should not have to stop what we are doing if we've put in those 5 years, or 7, or 9, or 12, we should immediately recognize, thank you, I know who thou art. Nothing. Carnal mind. The belief in two powers. Get thee hence. And feel that we have given it a treatment. Your recognition of its source and of its non-power, if you have attained the consciousness of instantaneous recognition, or even if you spend an hour to attain it, will not make it any more real than it was in the beginning. Suppose it comes over the air or in the paper that this is the flu season or polio season. Why should that strike terror in us? Why should we have to sit down for an hour? Why, after all these years of infinite way study and practice, should we not be able to say, ah, yes, here comes that belief in two powers, and dismiss it? But see, if you're a beginner and you haven't attained the consciousness of it, you could hear a rumor of an earthquake, and you could say the words, have the thoughts, ah, yes, here comes a belief in two powers, and dismiss it, and the house will fall in on your head. You don't have the consciousness of it, only the words and thoughts. Suppose there are threats of war. Why should we not at this stage of our unfoldment be able, even if we are about our business or our housework or taking a bath or involved in anything, when we get the news, say, yes, but they have only temporal power, and shrug it off? Now, he says, I am not saying to you that a young student should dare to do this. They must go through all of the processes until they have attained the consciousness. The reason is, and never forget this, there is a third principle. The natural man is not under the law of God. So it is that the natural man, which is the young student, their words and thoughts are all powerless. They have no power to nullify the appearance. They have no power to bring the grace of God into expression. They are still the natural man, who is not under the law of God, neither indeed can be. So you may be the natural man for the next 3 to 5 years or more, until you have developed the fourth dimensional consciousness that error is nullified. You do not even have to voice anything. Once you have the consciousness of the nothingness of error, you could look at error rolling down and smile at it, and it would fade and fall away. If you attain the consciousness, you would not have to fight and bring yourself to a point of realization. If you are in the fourth dimensional consciousness, you could say, what did hinder you? Pick up your bed and walk. But you cannot say this from the third dimensional natural man consciousness. That is why all these young practitioners are not achieving the healings and wondering why, since they know the same truth that everybody else does. The reason is, it is not knowing the truth that does it. No, we just had that example. You're knowing the truth with words and thoughts, and the house falls in on you and crushes you. Squashes you. What does do it is the attaining of the fourth dimensional consciousness of truth. It is only when you have arrived at the place where evil is not real in your consciousness that you can sit down and do the great healing works. Now, most of our students are not doing good work. Now, he knew that. I am sure they must wonder why, because they have these tapes, and they attend the meetings, and they know the books. They do not realize that the reason is they have not worked with them long enough or faithfully enough to have attained the actual consciousness where they can look out here and just smile at error, knowing that it is a universal belief in two powers, not ordained of God, and therefore nothingness. Now, because you know the words or have the thoughts about the nature of error being nothing, it does not mean you have the consciousness. And you do not have the consciousness when you take them into meditation until you've seen them dissolve over and over and over again. And 5 years later, you know they're going to dissolve. So you turn on the TV and they're talking about corruption in high places, and automatically carnal mind, automatically nothingness. And it does dissolve. You see it. You know it. Now it's become bone of your bone, flesh of your flesh. It's your consciousness. And now, and only now, you can smile at error because you know it does not have its source in God. Therefore, it's nothingness. But you really know it by using the tools you have learned and seeing that they work. When a person conducts an infinite way meeting, it is not going to be too fruitful except in proportion to their ability to look out from up here and see the divine consciousness of God. And at the same time, see all the evil sitting out there, the sin, the disease, the false appetite, the lack, the limitation, as the carnal mind. Evil is not to be treated, not to be worked against, not to be fought, not to be overcome, but to be recognized as the carnal mind, a belief in two powers, the arm of flesh, universal hypnotism, mesmerism, a mirage, a series of mental concepts, nothingness. Each time you are aware of something beautiful out front, love coming up, friendliness coming up, gratitude coming up, there is a smile there. You are seeing it as the divine consciousness, not as a particular person. In the same way, you are bound to see sickness out there. There is a load of it at every meeting. Sickness, false appetite, sin, lack, limitation, unemployment. However, in proportion as you can sit up here and see all that and inwardly smile, I know thee who thou art, the universal belief in two carnal powers, that carnal mind, the arm of flesh, nothingness. They must go out uplifted. They must go out healed. If they are receptive, that is what gives you your power, not what you are saying. It is the consciousness that you have attained. It is not the words in one of our books. Everybody has the same words in the same book. It is, however, arriving at that state of consciousness. You should be sure that you are handling these specific principles. Remember, the reason you are doing it is to arrive at the state of consciousness where you look out into this world and see only two things. One, the divine consciousness being more and more manifest, and two, the nothingness of the carnal mind. And I wrote down here, if you really work with these principles 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you are no longer the natural man. You have elevated consciousness and are now the Son of God. And I can't add to that. Many blessings. A happy new year, but a happy new self. A happy new consciousness will make all things new. Thank you.